This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Everyone, welcome.
Good morning
to Jikoji on this wonderful midsummer day. Hello to Karin and Jackie and Daryl and Corinne and Shishen and Chris online. Would you like to introduce yourselves, please?
Wei.
And I'm Doug, so welcome, everybody. Today, I'm going to speak a little bit about one of the Brahma Viharas, benevolence. It's an attribute of Ken Wing, who I'm going to is a memorial service immediately after this talk down in Santa Cruz. But benevolence is also known as Maitri or Metta, loving kindness. And there are several aspects to benevolence I want to talk about. First, I want to read a brief passage from the Emeritus Professor William Powell's Dongshan's Teachings, number 75. The master went up to the hall, to the assembled hall, and asked, "Is there anyone who does not reciprocate for the four forms of benevolence or respond to the three classes of beings?" The assembly made no response. Master Tongshan spoke again and said, "If one does not personally experience the meaning of this, how can they transcend the tribulations of birth and death? If constantly and without break, you don't let any thought come into contact with things, or any step come to rest, then you will accord with reality. You should strive earnestly and not pass the day at ease." So he says, is there anyone who does not reciprocate for the four forms of benevolence? So the four forms of benevolence that I have, there may be others, but these are what I have of Maitri or Metta, loving kindness, friendliness, amity, which is goodwill between groups, and also an active interest in others. An active interest in others is a form of benevolence. Loving kindness, friendliness, goodwill between groups, and an active interest in others. So he says, is there anyone who does not reciprocate for the four forms of benevolence? Does not reciprocate or does not meet or engage, and or respond to the three classes of beings. Well, this translator, William Powell, translates the three classes of beings as beings existing in the three realms of Indian cosmology, which are beings in the realm of desire, beings in the realms of form, and beings in the formless realm. Is there anyone who does not reciprocate to the four forms of benevolence or respond to the three classes of beings? And no one responded. And then he went on to say, if one does not personally experience the meaning of this, how can you transcend the tribulations of birth and death? Now he talks about to personally experience it. And that's the wondrous thing about this Zen practice, is we are each required to personally experience it. We can't, I can come up here and talk to you about it, but you each have to experience loving kindness, friendliness, an active interest in another. And I'm sure you have experienced all of these at various times. And I hope I've triggered some response in you to hear about. We also personally experience this when we remember it. And so basically, to me, giving a talk is actually talking about remembering things we already know. Deep down, we know it, but it's like we forgot. So this aspect of benevolence that our friend Ken had was manifest in many ways. He was very quiet yet profound man, but he was always there to help out, whether it was a young child, whether it was his wife being a chauffeur, even doing the cooking and dishwashing and even laundry. He was brilliant. He worked in the tech field for decades and traveled the world. And where he would meet people, he would probably still share this nature he had of knowing he had what he had enough. He understood that there was, he didn't need a lot of things, that he was blessed with a lot. And so he could offer to others without with boundless love. In our, the development of Buddhism, and especially Zen Buddhism, Taoism has played an important part in what Zen Buddhism is about. In fact, there's a dispute whether Taoists discovered the forms of Buddhism and decided to use some of them and made Zen practice, this meditation practice. There are others that suggest that it was Buddhists who discovered the Taoist ways and took that on. So did it start with one camp or the other? But anyway, here we are. With this aspect of benevolence, in Japanese, it's jin. And it's, probably can't see this bottom character, but it's four characters. The two on the left represent a person, and the two on the right represent the number two. And in Confucianism, Confucius considered that a human was not manifesting as humanity unless there were two. mother and child, father and child, like husband and wife or partners. Maybe some of you have been on a solo voyage somewhere, solo journey somewhere, and you come out of the wilderness or and back into the world, and it's like, how do I relate again? It's really wonderful to kind of like, it's new. What is relationship? But this character of Ren in Chinese or Jin in Japanese is actually a very important quality that this benevolence quality to confuse. And another translator translated as authoritative conduct, to act authoritatively. An authoritative person is the foremost project taken up by Confucius. Which manifested humanity, the humanness that we have, and manifest it with another. One cannot become a person by oneself. We are irreducibly social beings. And Jin in this benevolence is translated in Japanese as goodness, humanity, human-heartedness, humanity at its best. The authoritative person is a model that others recognize and aspire to emulate gladly without coercion. You know, the word authoritative usually implies a little more rigidity, but this form of benevolence and authoritative beingness or manifestation is without coercion. To defer to appropriateness and to others' personhood in non-coercive ways. So back to Master Tongshan, he says, is there anyone who does not reciprocate or respond to the four forms of benevolence, or respond to the three classes of beings? And if we do not personally experience the meaning of this, how can we transcend the tribulations of birth and death? If constantly and without break, you don't let any thought come into contact with things. I'll stop there. Without letting any thought come into contact with things. So one of the most eminent positions in a Buddhist temple is the cook. And the cook is putting their full attention on exactly what they're working on without any stray thoughts coming in. It's just, and however, what also comes into it is the interconnectedness of all of existence, from the carrot you're slicing and the dirt that it grew in and the water that nourished it through its root hairs, from the water that came from the sky, from irrigation ditches, to the water that cleaned it so it's ready to be prepared. All of that goes into each action. And sometimes we bring our understandings of all this into each thing we work with without a stray thought. Continuously. And in a continuously, constantly, step after step without rest, maybe then we lie down and rest for the day. But when our day begins, this notion of to constantly attend to this is one of the core aspects of our practice. To continuously be aware moment after moment, even when you're thinking, being aware is helpful in our thinking. And one of the qualities that we develop in our in this practice of Zazen is to constantly be aware of this body and this breath that we have. And in the midst of watching this breath, we get to watch what comes into our mind. And if you're touching your breath the whole time, you're actually watching your mind. Try that sometime. Just hold your attention on your breath and allow thoughts to come in. The thoughts are experienced in a different way. Instead of in the dream, daydreaming quality of going off and thinking about, oh, I wish I could be in Alaska, or oh, when's the bell gonna ring, or when can I do this? Oh, when can I be with my partner again? And if you maintain that constancy with breath while you're engaged in those kinds of thinking, it's like there's a continuity to your core. In book four of Confucius's Analects, he says, Master Confucius says, Zing, my friend, my way is bound together with one continuous strand. My way is bound together with one continuous strand. Now, Koban Chino Urogawa Roshi, our founder here, said, human activity is like the building of a nest or web. The spider makes his web in space, and when he flies from this tree to that tree, always that sticky string comes. It becomes hard and supports him. Humans have done this kind of job for a long time. It's like putting a bridge, like the Golden Gate Bridge, in space. When we build a bridge through space, we are walking in space that we couldn't walk through before. And then Koban went on to say, a few times a big war shows up. And that if we go on and on this way, everyone will fall off the bridge. So Confucius talked about his way was, my way is bound together with one continuous strand. And Koban talks about our way is like building a web. So maybe some of you have taken fresh wool off a sheep or harvested cotton, those threads, and you roll the threads and they become a bigger thread, a strand, but it's made of many, many, many strands, many, many individual pieces of wool or cotton. Silk is, they talk about, actually it's one continuous thread in per cocoon, which may be as long as a kilometer, 1,000 meters, 2/3 of a mile. So we have these other ways of threads that exist, but to look at our life as one continuous strand and to pay attention to that, our existence continuously, moment after moment, is the way. That is the way. Koban also goes on to say that this sitting practice that we do is a way of accomplishing our innermost concern of our religious life. So we find that possibility here in this practice. So is there anyone who does not reciprocate for the four forms of benevolence? Loving kindness, friendliness, amity between groups, or goodwill between groups and nations, and active interest in others. So I'm going to stop there, and thank you for listening. But I'd like to listen now to maybe what's come up, your experiences, your comments, your questions, whatever. Yes, Ross.
I was curious, could you tell us a story of how Mike viewed benevolence?
Repeat again?
You know, Mike, who you're going to service this afternoon?
Ken.
Oh, Ken. Okay, Ken. That's why it's confusing. I was wondering if you could share a story about Ken and how he was benevolent to you. Mm-hmm. Or how that made you feel.
Well, I'd go down and help him work. We would just, he had a mammoth madrone tree that was like 4 feet in diameter that fell on one of his houses. And he had a company come and chop it up. And I brought our log splitter down and we split it all up into great firewood because their source of heat is wood stove down there in Santa Cruz. On this property that's between UC Santa Cruz and the Wilder Park, I think is what it's called. He was friendly to me, but I know that he helped raise 25 kids. They had three, he and his first wife and his second wife, they had three, Holly, David, and Jasmine. But they also had another 22 or more that came to live with them at various times. To me, you know, finding a place for them to be, feeding them was another way. I guess I got a story where there was a benevolence towards me because, you know, I'm a troublesome person here. And I was asked to take a month off, go away. And I was like, can't be doing this, Doug. You got to go away for a month. I said, yay, you get to go, which wasn't the the proper response. I should have been, oh, geez, I want to stay, but I really was glad to go. And he and his wife asked me to stay with them for a few days. So they moved out of their house, this 2.5-story Japanese structure that Comencino lived in for 5 years, and gave me a room with all of these, I think there were 21 statues, wooden statues like this. I forget what they're called, but he got them in China of the different bodhisattvas and asuras, vigorous spirits. And I mean, I should have slept in their little trailer. It was like one of these little single bed trailers. He and his wife went out there to sleep, and they had me sleep there. And I experienced his benevolence that way. And it was kind of embarrassing because I can take care of myself, but to actually embrace the gifts of others is sometimes hard for us, and yet it's important to receive it. But after 3 days, they'd had enough of me, so I was on my way. Yes.
I'm Doris. I'm a little confused by the message of detachment and not wanting wealth or things or possessions. And your example just now is perfect for how much good you can do for others, how much good in the world when you have money, when you have homes, when you have a trailer to sleep in, whatever. You can do so much good for people. Why wouldn't the wish be that everyone could have the ability to give and help everyone? I don't know if I'm clear with that.
As a young man and a young householder, my wife and I had four boys, and I had to go to work to pay the rent, to buy the food, to keep us going. I always wanted to be generous and give more, but I couldn't. I had to take care of what I had. I could give somebody a ride who was hitchhiking. If I'd eaten half of a Subway sandwich and I had another one half left, I could hand it to a guy on the street who maybe was asking for money or food. I could do little things like that. So we do what we can. And what's interesting is people who have lots, they only want a little more. Just a little more. And they're not able to give. Or if they give, they want their name broadcast that they gave. And yet you hear stories of people traveling in foreign countries that are poor, and they are welcomed into a village and into a home, and with the meager accommodations and food they are presented with, just a magnificent meal and the best bed in the house, and there that kind of hospitality is offered by people who have little. So it's, how do we work with our own sense of enough? And Ken was one who, one of his mantras was, one does not need many things. And he did not need many things. And he'd need a chainsaw, you know, he'd go get that. He'd need a car. He actually had several cars, but most of them were broken down because that was his playful, dreamlike quality. He was wanting to fix these old Volvos. And sometimes we accumulate things like that, and can't ever get to them in our life, this life. Got to come back and do it again. You know, there is no escape from life. Not even death, isn't it? There might be an escape from this mortal coil, but it ain't over. That was a saying Bernie Glassman in the White Plum lineage, Meizumi Roshi lineage said. So talking about strands and sticky webs, you know, our actions, our efforts, our collaborations help to make connections and roadways for others. But sometimes they're quite sticky, and we need to be careful about that. So it's, to me, it's helpful to have these adjectives like the continuity of our life thread or strand as to help see our lives in a way that when it comes time to make a decision to go one way or another, we can maybe look at what our core is about. Are we angry? Are we greedy? Do we feel like we don't have enough? Do we have animosity? Is that what's driving this? Because those are all sticky. So when you have lots, it isn't necessarily that you give it all away, but you can make it useful to others too. And Ken and Hollis, you know, raising three, but also including 22 or more others, and besides other people who came to, their land was vast, so they let others come and live on their land for a while, till they got their head above water, and figured out what was next. In a way, Jokoji has been that in the past, where people would come here, they would land here, and they'd want to engage in the practice. But they'd also be here in the woods, and it's like a healing place to be. And then some of the original people that came to Jokoji and lived in the valley before, there were like 90 people that lived in the valley, and many were here because there was no place else to go. But they found their way. They found their example of one right here who found other ways of finding sustenance to survive and thrive. And most have done that, including Ken and Hollis when they lived here before this was Jokoji. I hope I touched on some of what you asked. Okay. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Doug. Thanks for your talk. I've been thinking about life as an artist and life as a very conscious person and whether there's a kind of a conflict there, because when you are an artist, like I'm writing stories, you don't always want to have your mind in focus in a way, because ideas kind of come in. And that's kind of a mysterious thing that happens. And so can you talk to that kind of a topic? Like, I'm just puzzling over this, and maybe you can help.
I'll use Ken Wing again, because he said he meditated all his life, but his form of meditation was daydreaming. Reverie. Daydreaming can be the quality of going after, chasing after desires, but it can also be like what you're talking about, Jackie, of what's this character going to do? Who, what is that? What are they about? And you sit with that. And the mind in that space, then it, just the vastness unfolds, doesn't it? And that's where, that's what's so beautiful to connect with. Thich Nhat Hanh, one of his things that he said was that it is possible to truly understand, but you have to take the time to investigate and understand. It might be discovering some of it in books. It might be this, what you're talking about, Jackie, of just sitting with our body and mind, paying attention to our breath. And then it's like this vast open field is present of to investigate, explore, free associate, and these all these threads of connection appear.
Right.
And some of them make it onto paper or onto canvas, maybe.
Yes. But it's not a single thread. You were saying it's a single thread, like a cocoon unwinding to a single thread. But an artist experience, like you just said, doesn't feel like a single thread. It feels like an explosion of many threads.
Well, a silk thread is not made of one cocoon thread, because one cocoon thread stretches out for like a kilometer, 1,000 meters. Now you're not going to, I mean, how can you even see that to put it that through a needle? You need many of these. So a strand is composed of many threads, many pieces.
Okay.
Many, 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 many pieces. Hmm. And then by weaving them together, it forms a cloth or a thicker fabric or even a brocade. And isn't that how our life's connections are? It's almost a three-dimensional brocade.
Hmm. Good. Thanks. I'll think on that. Thank you. That's good.
I'll take one more question, unless we're done. Yes, Karin. Hi.
Hi, Doug. Thank you so much for your talk today. I just wonder if you could mention anything else about how you're a troublemaker.
We can all tell you. Why would you ask that? I wonder.
Why would you ask that when somebody here said? Well,
don't do it,
Don. Don't take the bait. There's on that thread is a hook.
Maybe you should stop the recording.
We love you no matter what.
Well, I'll just say this. As a dad of four, you know, I had a wife, and my wife and I had four boys, and I could never really figure out what it was to be a dad. You know, I knew, you know, there was helping out, you know, feeding them, taking them places. There were all these different things, but I could never I one time when I was a young man, I went to a friend's house and met her dad, who had a big eagle on his arm, and he was a stout guy, and he had strong, firm convictions and knew what he knew and wanted. And I thought, wow, you know, that's the way to be as an older person. And I got older and I tried that on, it didn't fit. It was like, I think what I was exploring was the not knowing, part of being a dad. You know, it's endless, because being a dad is sometimes being the mom, and sometimes being the friend, and sometimes being the chauffeur. I tried the disciplinarian part, and that didn't work out too well, because I think I spanked one of my kids once, and I felt so bad. It's like, you know, this isn't working. So it's, in a way, I felt like my wife had five boys, and the youngest one was this one. I was just too playful and immature in ways, but you still grow gray, you still get old, and I want to do it again and again, this existence. So I hope that's right, that life can occur again, that the sweetness of life, even the agony of life. Like I was talking with a young man here experiencing the Zazen Kai, and the I'm sure those of you who have sat the first period today, you know, it's like, when's the bell gonna ring? How am I gonna deal with sitting here quietly? How do I survive? How do I connect? How do I proceed? No one else is moving. Why? So you just sit here, and it's like, how am I? So you have to find your way. That's what this is about. We have to individually experience finding our way. And by coming together, we share on how to do that. So we help each other along the way when we come together. You help me, maybe I can help you. And it's when we sit alone, it's like, oh, my knees hurt, I'm getting up. Need another cup of tea. But when you're with a group, it's like you endure, and you get to endure things that you don't normally get to. And by enduring and persevering and maintaining that constancy, it's like either become a shaking, anxious mess, or you actually say, okay, I'm just going to pay attention to my breath and just watch this breath go in and watch it closely go out and watch the next breath go in. And there's a settling that happens, a deepening, that perseverance helps us to succeed in making it to the bell at the end of the period. And it also helps us know that we can succeed at anything we do with just one more breath.
Up to yesterday, you were talking about not just acquiescing to whatever and actually taking the risk, I suppose, and making your thoughts or your ideas, you know, prevalent, which can stir it up a little bit, and that there's a little bit of fear factor and all that. And I'm wondering if Karen, wherever she went, she disappeared. Anyway, she's a little bit of a stirrer.
A pot stirrer?
Yeah. So I'm wondering, you know, because you talked about how that's sort of important in some ways. Rather, I said something about putting your foot in your mouth. It wasn't about putting your foot in your mouth, it was about saying with my mind that's important to be able to say that. Oh, there you are.
I see you.
I heard that.
Yeah, it's important to be ourselves. No one else can be who you are. No one. And you can't be anybody else. So you have to be, might as well accept the fact of who you are and be yourself fully. Be true to yourself, speak your truth when it's time, and be willing to experience the consequences. Sometimes that's really difficult, and sometimes it's better to just wait for another opportunity. But sometimes it's important to say the truth as best as you know, and meet the situation that way. So this personal experience, then when you personally experience that, like nobody can take that one from you. You know how it went, you know what you said, you know the circumstances, you know the response and what the ramifications maybe are. And it just helps us see more of these threads of this existence. Thank you, everyone, today.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.